No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspective, this is Revenge of the Birds. Hello, did you miss us? Cardinals fans, this is Revenge of the Birds Radio. I'm your host, Jess Root, and welcome to the latest episode of Revenge of the Birds Radio. We have been off for the last month as the off season came to a close. OTAs completed, minicamp completed, but we are in the week of training camp. Football is finally here. And so, after a month layoff, we are back. We are ready to talk football. We are ready to talk Arizona Cardinals. We're ready to talk training camp, which will start, well, the players, well, the veterans will report on Friday. They will have their conditioning test, the famous run test, and Revenge of the Birds will be there. I will be there covering much of training camp to start off the year. And then on Saturday will be the first of 18 open practices that the Cardinals will hold at University of Phoenix Stadium. So we are here. Again, this is Jess Root. I'm waiting for Seth Cox to come in as he will join us to talk Arizona Cardinals football training camp, an array of different things as football is finally here. If you would like to give us a call, give us your thoughts, hit us up at 646-478-3787. That is, of course, if you're listening to the show live. If you're listening via download, you won't be able to get us live. However, you can hit us up on Twitter. Hit me up on Twitter at Senor Jess Root or at Revenge of Birds. You can find me at either handle there. And that way you could talk to me, I will respond back, we'll give you feedback, if you have questions, comments, jokes, insight, however you want to do it. And we're going to get ready to get started. Note that we are starting off this year. The show was brought to you by Audible.com, which is the content provider of more than 100,000 different audio sources of content. It's a great, great product. I've had it. And it's wonderful. You can download audiobooks. If you join the membership, what you are able to do is to download, stream all sorts of books. And for a limited time right now, if you would like to try it out for free, go ahead and go to audibletrial.com/revengeofthebirds. That's the audibletrial.com/revengeofthebirds. Sign up for free and get yourself a free audiobook download of your choice. And then you can try it out for a month, see what you like. If you like it, keep on going. Enjoy the great service. Again, that's audibletrial.com/revengeofthebirds for the trial run. And, well, we're at we're at training camp, and Seth is joining us, so we will bring him on the line. And, Seth, how is it going today? How are you?
Good, Jess. How are you?
Doing great. How good is it after this last month of really slow, and when it comes to the internet, it's list after list, overachievers, underachievers, breakout, rankings. How good is it to get back to actual real football and real football talk and analysis of stuff that's actually going on the field?
It's going to be nice. We'll get to end the speculation of the positive and the negative and kind of just get right into seeing what this Cardinals team has on the field and what other Cardinals teams or, you know, what their opponents will have this year. I mean, for me, that's what it's all about, is actually seeing what's going on the field. So.
Well, and you can join us again on the conversation. If you want to give us a call, 646-478-3787, or hit us up on Twitter. You can hit me at Senor Jess Root or at Revenge of Birds. And if you are listening via download, of course, join the site, revengeofthebirds.com, our Arizona Cardinals SB Nation blog, and you will find a great community of Arizona Cardinals fans, great conversation, and great content. Of course, I'm not just saying that, even though that it is that I do most of the content on there, but of course I'm going to say that it's good. But there are lots of great Arizona Cardinals fans there. You get great discussion, great insight from Cardinals fans actually all over the world, not just here in Arizona, all over the nation. I know we've got overseas fans and in South America. I know at least one reader who's down in Chile. So here we go. Let's go ahead and get started into the topic. So tell us, let's go ahead and get started when it comes to the topics. We're going to talk a little about what we're excited about, what we're worried about. We're going to talk a little about the injuries that have the Cardinals as concern right now. We're going to talk about position battles and our predictions. Talk about surprise cuts. Who's going to stand out in terms of making the roster that might be a surprise? And then our final thoughts. Seth, tell us, what has you most excited about the startup camp?
For me, what I'm most excited about right now is just to see what this defense is going to look like this year. Obviously, I'm excited about the offense and to see of what, you know, kind of what's going on there. But I want to see the defense and how Todd Bowles, how he schemed so well last year, what he does this year differently, and kind of where he's going with this defense now that he's lost his dynamic inside linebacker duo.
And me, what I am really excited about, other than the fact it's just football, let's get back to football, let's see some, finally get some pads on now. I am fortunate enough that with my media access, I'm able to see some of the practices that go on during the off season. However, since it's still in shorts, it's not quite the same. You don't get the exact feel. The volume, as Bruce Arians says, the volume hasn't come up. The volume level hasn't come up. The pads hitting, and that's, we're going to get a little blood on your lips and things like that. Just finally some contact. Other than the quarterbacks, since quarterbacks actually have the easy life. But I'm really excited, actually, to see the offensive execution. You're talking more defense. I'm really excited to see how the offense has evolved. If they can build on the end of last year and not have the up and down nearly so much as what you had early in the year. Conversely, worries heading into camp. What am I most worried about as we head into camp this week? I'm worried about, well, is it an unfounded worry? But it's just because of the trend. The last three preseasons, the Cardinals have lost at least one starter for the seasoned injured reserve. In 2011, it was cornerback Greg Toler. And then secondly, they lost Ryan Williams for the season. 2012, they lost Levi Brown for the season, which put the offensive line into a big mess with DeAnthony Batiste and Jeremy Bridges, and which ended up being Nate Potter. And it forced Bobby Massey into action perhaps before he was ready. Then last season we saw Jonathan Cooper go down early on, again, the offensive line. I look back and I went back a little bit further time. That was just a three-year trend. Before that, there hasn't been any real trend of injuries at end of player season. But that worries me because the Cardinals are in a situation, especially this season, they're talking about competing and making the playoffs. They've even thrown out the idea of playing in their home stadium for the Super Bowl. They can ill afford any key injuries. Seth, what are you most worried about? What are you legitimately concerned about as camp starts?
I would say the backs, well, for the Cardinals, the back eight. I'm concerned about the linebacker and defensive backs. You know, you look at what you have right now. You have a group at safety that's going to consist of, you know, Deion Buchanan, who's a rookie, and then you have Rashad Johnson, who's a good player, but I wouldn't say he's great by any means. Then you have, obviously, Patrick Peterson, who's on the cusp of being one of the elite, you know, cornerbacks in the NFL, and then you have Tony Cromartie, who everybody's hoping comes back to, you know, his 2012 form, but there is a chance that he is the 2013 cornerback that he was. So we'll see what happens. And then, of course, on the linebackers, you have the inside linebacker issues that we're waiting to figure out, and you also have the outside linebacker issues, something that nobody really talks about. Everybody kind of just says, oh, you know, the outside linebackers are fine, but when you really just look at the roster and the depth chart of the outside linebackers right now, you have, you know, John Abraham, who's going to be 36. You have Sam Macho, who's really had one good season his rookie year and then has been kind of a nice role player in a defense, but hasn't been a three down threat. And then you have Matt Shaughnessy, kind of opposite, and he's the perfect run stopping outside linebacker versus Acho's play, you know, in the secondary. So it's just an interesting concern I have on the defense, because I think the defensive front three is so dominant that you want to see what happens with that back eight in that Cardinals defense.
So are you going negative Nancy on us already, Seth? Is that what the plan is?
No, not completely. I see it. You know, I like to see things from both angles, and you know, when you look at everything in a, you know, as much as you can from a perspective of both sides, you see the upside of this defense. You see a lot of versatility, I guess you could call it, with the outside linebackers, the inside linebackers, guys that all bring different things to the table. Of course, you have, you know, very close to being a very elite cornerback duo in Peterson and Cromartie, but then you have to look at, well, what have they done lately? You know, Cromartie wasn't good last year, and we have no idea what to expect from the inside linebackers at this point. So it's and realistically, you really have no idea what to expect from the safeties, because Rashad Johnson was having a nice season, but he's not, like I said, he's not the be-all, end-all, and then, of course, Buchanan's a rookie, and we're expecting a lot, but he is a rookie, and, you know, they're rookies struggle at times, and so.
So what
I
you're
just like
saying is that you are going to be negative Ancy. I mean, I jest. It's all right. It's good balance. It really is. It's good balance, because I tend to, well, it concerns, I tend to see things too positively. You have the rep of stirring the pot a little bit, but that's all right. It gives us all something to talk about. There are valid concerns. I know that. But yeah, and you like to put a damper on things. I know you do. You revel in it.
I do. It's more enjoyable.
So, talk about these injuries. We, at least for right now, there's two major injury issues that would come up. We've got Alameda Te'amu with the torn ACL. He's rehabbing nicely. There hasn't really been any talk really about when he's going to come back, whether it's Bruce Arians saying, well, we're hoping to have him and Tyrann Mathieu back at the beginning of camp, to more like October 1st, which is after the bye. Tyrann Mathieu rehabbing his knee, an array of injuries, the torn ACL, torn LCL, and, well, great. So we've got these injuries. We don't know it. At least it's speculated, at least right now, that they're going to start the preseason on the physically unable to perform list, which makes sense. It gives them the most flexibility. It just means they can't practice, because if they start not on the list and then have a setback, they can't be put on that list. So they start there. If they're doing all right, then they jump into practice, and it gives them the flexibility that if for some reason they're unable to practice during the entire part of camp, they don't have to burn their season on injured reserve, and they could keep them on the pup list. However, that does burn the first 6 weeks of the season. Obviously, those are two very impactful players. In fact, you tweeted it out, or rather your site account tweeted out earlier about the impact of Te'amu, and I actually have some Lorenzo Alexander quotes. Well, actually, I posted it today. Lorenzo Alexander, veteran linebacker on the Cardinals, was on the radio the other day and had nothing but glowing words about Te'amu, about the way he just blew up double teams and made runners cut back, and his dynamic play in the run game. tell me, what do you think, when do you expect them, both Matthew and Anselmo, to return to practice? When do you think, it's obviously all speculation, when do you think that they're going to be back on the field ready to play? And what will be their what will be the impact of their loss until they come back?
I think we can expect Matthew back fairly at the Broncos game. That's just where I would have him. You know, if he's back anytime sooner, you're just happy about that. That's where I'm comfortable with that. Again, I'm not at his rehabs. I'm, you know, nothing like that. But you just kind of look where he should be, where, you know, it makes sense. And I think at that point, everybody would be kind of happy with him back at the Broncos game. So missed the first four games. He'd missed the first San Francisco game, if I remember right. And so that would kind of put a damper on things to start the season. But I think that's a fair and not too much of a rush type thing. Tamu's different. He's not that quick athlete type of thing. Obviously he's a very large man, so that knee has to hold up under an intense amount of pressure for a while, and he's, you know, really an anchor in the middle of that defense. So it's a different type of rehab. It's a different type of, you know, strength level that he has to be at when he comes back. You know, add to that, I believe he had surgery a little over a month later than when
Tyrann did.
Tyrann Mathieu, yeah. So I think it's fair to want to see him back right around the midseason. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if he started the year on the IR. I know they have that IR now. And like you said, the pup, they can definitely do that, but I don't know how that works going into the season. So if you want to educate me on that, I'm not sure.
Yeah, let me tell you, the PUP. The pup list is actually pretty simple. You can, if a player's been on the pup list, the preseason pup list, and didn't come off, if he's still on there and he's been there for the extent of the preseason and training camp, he can be moved to the regular season pup list. And it doesn't end their season. What it does is for the first 6 weeks of the season, they cannot. They're ineligible to play. And then after the sixth week, you can activate it. You have 2 weeks after that to decide whether to activate him or place him on injured reserve, which would then end his season. But that gives them a little bit more flexibility. The issue is that they can't have come off the pup list during the preseason, otherwise they're ineligible, and then they have to use injured reserve and how that goes. And so if they're not healthy enough to get back to practice, you have that option rather than burning a roster spot. That's actually the issue that I see to kind of give them a little bit of a roster kind of funny thing to deal with is, they have two players that they're going to come back at some point. They're not exactly sure. If they carry both of those players, like they've started practicing and they carry them on the regular season roster, then they basically burning two roster spots for players who can't play for 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, whatever it takes to get them there. So it's affecting the depth that way. But if you put one or both on the pup list, they can't come back until at least week 7. My personal opinion, if I had to look at the roster situation, I would guess, I'm going to speculate that one of them will end up on the pup list and not come back till later in the year. Luckily in the position of Tamu, he was playing 15, 16 snaps a game last year, splitting time evenly with Dan Williams in base situation. Dan Williams was doing a great job in his own right at anchoring that defensive line as a slightly different piece. He's actually, people talked about Dan Williams and his weight problems. Dan Williams is actually a little small. It's smaller than Te'amu. Dan Williams is about 6 foot, a little under 6 foot, 320. Te'amu's 6 foot three, 350, up to 360. So the guy is massive. But at least in the meantime, as long as Williams is healthy, he can handle those 30 snaps a game. And I would be willing to say if one of those two ends on the pup list, it's going to be Te'amu to start the year. But and that way allowing the flexibility of getting Matthew back earlier, and his dynamic play is so important. I mean, as we saw when his first game after the injury when against Tennessee, the defensive just kind of felt probably gave us a 34 points. Ryan Fitzpatrick looked like an all-pro against that defense last year.
Yeah, and that's definitely so that I would just say right now, put him on the pup list, like not even mess with anything else. That would be my opinion of what they should do. Just because, like you said, you want the option to bring back Matthew as soon as possible. Obviously, you don't want to rush it because he is a valuable, important piece going forward, but you do want that ability to bring him off the DL and let him play, and no, it's not the DL, the IR, sorry. I'm in baseball mode still for some reason. And bring him back into the roster and back into the fold as soon as possible. Whereas Te'amu, as you said, he's a, 20-snap-a-game type of player. So it's not a huge deal if you miss him for the first 6 weeks, which brings you to game, seven or game five. Yeah. So, that'd be a nice piece, nice time for him to come back. I think it makes sense. Obviously it just depends on the rehab, but again, his size, like you said, he's just a massive individual. It's going to take some time for him to get into shape too, especially game shape. So that's what you'll want to see. And, I think that's what I would do. It is to be seen what they will do. The one thing that you have to be worried about, and again, I'll be negative here. The rotation of Williams and Te'amu made them incredibly effective against the run because you had two guys where there was basically no wear and tear on those guys during the game. They were able to stay fresh and anchor the middle of that defense and really hold up double teams and free up the inside linebackers and even free up guys like Dockett and Campbell at times. So what that does is now all of a sudden you're going to ask Dan Williams to fill that role for, double the amount of snaps. Maybe that's not as effective. That is something you'll have to watch going forward and something that'll be interesting to watch early in preseason while he's getting snaps and to see where his level of the word's slipping my mind right now, but if he's up to it and if he's getting winded, because that is something that we've long heard about Dan Williams, is he's never in great shape like he's supposed to be.
And that's definitely the case. Now, the reason I would say that look at the guys they have on the bench. Frosty Rucker can play inside. He's not done a lot. Ed Stinson, now granted, he's not quite as big. I think he's listed about 287, so he doesn't have quite the girth of either Williams or Te'amu, but he is a very strong individual who probably can hold up. It might not be quite as dynamic. They've got a couple of really big nose tackles on that of those undrafted kids, Bruce Gaston and Justin Renfro, that are some intriguing players to watch, not necessarily for making the roster right now. But the thing about it for me, the reason why you let Te'amu sit, aside from the whole size thing, is because you want it once Matthew's back, instead of say, if he's healthy, week four, week five, you don't want to delay that. If he's ready to play then and able to play at a good level, you don't want to push that to week seven. He's a special player. He does things that other players don't do on the field. And that's really, for me, plus he's chomping at the bit, and he really doesn't want to be. I mean, he doesn't want to end up being on the pup list. The thought Mike Jarecki tweeted the other day that it's probably going to be the case. And what did Tyron tweet back? He tweeted back in reply, a sad face. He wants to at least be able to do those positional drills. If he's on the pup list, he can't even do drills with his. He can't do anything. He can't practice. He can't be with his. He can't do the drills. I mean, he can be out there with the players, but he can't at all participate in any drills at all. And I think that's one thing, at least for a young player like him, as hard as he's worked, I think for his psyche, he almost needs that in a way to continue to drive him to get better.
Yeah, and I think he doesn't, like you said, he doesn't want to be on that pup list, so he needs to find a way, and the Cardinals need to find a way to kind of have that happy medium and him, you know, be on the active roster game one. Not expecting him to play, but like you said, just be on the roster. That, you know, he'll kind of get a little medical red shirt for the first 2-3 games until they feel like he's ready. The other thing is, and this is something that maybe, I don't know if we'll talk about tonight, but maybe in another podcast coming up here. You wonder about, do you just bring him back and let him focus on one position as opposed to flipping him around and asking him to do a lot of different things? Can he just focus on being a slot cornerback for the first 2-4 weeks of the season, as opposed to working at safety, working at nickel, working at dime, kind of playing that joker back where he's roving, you know, and blitzing and doing different things? What can they allow him to play in the slot, and how will that help him in his road coming back? So that would be my other thing.
And I think that's a good point. Ideally, they could bring him on a little bit more slowly. But at the same time, I think it'll depend on the play of the guys behind him or ahead of him, at least at safety. If they're getting good play out of Tody Jefferson and Dalen Buchanan and Rashad Johnson, then they can afford to bring him up slowly. But if they're having some issues back there, it's going to be a big temptation. It'll be really easy to say, hey, let's throw him into the fire and at least play him at all the positions, maybe watch his snap count from there. Let's move on to position battles. Before we do, I'd like to let you guys know we are on the air right now. If you want to give us a call, 646-478-3787. Again, 646-478-3787. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio. You can talk to us live if, of course, you're listening live. If you're listening via download, well, you will have to wait to call in on another show or contact us via Twitter or the site Revenge of the Birds. And this portion of the show is brought to you by FanDuel.com. For you fantasy football players or fantasy sports players in general, FanDuel is one of the best sites you can absolutely go to. It is a site that you can play any day. There's no late. There's so many games that you can either sign up, whether it's a dollar to get into some games. You can play one day. You can play every day. You decide what you do. Right now, it's just baseball. The football games are coming, the fantasy teams. You start with a new team every single day, and you only play when you want. You get real money leagues going from $1 up to $1,000, and there is money, real money, to be won. FanDuel will pay up to $1 million every day this baseball season, and over $400 million this year. FanDuel.com for you fantasy sports. Keep an eye out on that, especially if you're not much of a fantasy baseball fan. FanDuel.com will have football games too. And again, this is unique in the fact that it is not one team for the entire season. You can play a day at a time, a game at a time, and you don't have to. You can win a little or a lot. So FanDuel.com, keep an eye out for that. Sign up now at FanDuel.com. And we start now as we get back to the show again. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio. I'm Jess Root. We've got Seth Cox on the line, and we're going to start talking position battles. These are perhaps the most intrigued. Now, we're going to talk about all of them, but before we go into the specifics on who and what, we're going to name the two position battles that both of us are most intrigued. So name the two, and why are those two position battles in particular the ones you're keeping an eye out for? Seth, you go first. Who are you? What are your two position battles that you are most excited to watch?
I'll just say the right side of the offensive line. we saw Sal and Fanica last year. I don't want to see that again, especially next to each other. So I'm really intrigued to see if Massey and Watford can win, at least one of them can win those position battles and kind of take the reins and have a really young and athletic and dynamic offensive line. And then you have, you know, old reliable in the middle in Lyle Sendline. So I think that's what I'm most looking forward to. It's kind of a cop-out, but, it's something that Cardinals fans have yearned for decades.
And I'm actually going to go on. I'm not going to touch the offensive line, at least at right tackle. It appears for now, obviously things could change, that Bobby Massey has begun to pull away a little bit. So I don't see that as so much as an intriguing position battle. When it comes to right guard, I'm a little bit intrigued by the fact that Earl Watford still hasn't passed Paul Fanica, which makes me think, I personally think that's going to kind of stay the same. I don't know. People are talking about Earl Watford predicting. I don't know about that. We'll talk about that in a second. There's actually a couple positions. First and foremost, I think the most exciting position for me to watch will be wide receiver 3, just because of the potential playmaking that there will be at that position when you've got veteran Ted Ginn and you've got third-round pick John Brown. I think this training camp, this preseason, will be a lot of fun to see those two speedsters out there making plays, ideally making plays, whether it be at special teams or at the wide receiver position. Now, obviously, I think Ted Ginn will have the edge at least to start, but the way they've been talking about John Brown, it'll be hard to keep him off the field, much like it kind of get the impression. Now, the way they talk about John Brown this year is the kind of the way they talked about Andre Ellington last year. And the only thing that kept Andre Ellington off the field is that they were worried about the workload. John Brown's a receiver. He's not going to get the same type of wear and tear that a running back does. So I think it's going to be hard to keep John Brown off the field. I'm really excited to see that. The other one, there are several position battles I'm really intrigued about, but the other one is over at strong safety, because with the departure of Jeremiah Bell, right now you've kind of got a kind of a three-way battle going on right now. You pretty much assume, well, once Tyron's back, he's healthy, he's going to take free safety. And until then, you figure Rashad Johnson will be the guy over there. Now, Rashad can play either side fairly decently. He's a guy, as Kent Hoder's told us on Twitter before, he's a big Rashad Johnson fan, not necessarily because he's a dynamic playmaker, but he's a guy you can win with. He's inexpensive. He's smart. He's where he's supposed to. He's not going to be a Pro Bowler, but he's a guy you can win with. But beside that, at the strong safety position, I think we're going to have a fun battle between the rookie and Daylon Buchanan and the second-year undrafted kid out of Tony Jefferson.
Tony Jefferson.
Yes. And we're going to see Tony Jefferson and Daylon Buchanan, really two young players. Jefferson, still inexperienced, but has a year under his belt. I think that'll be fun to watch because both of them, the thing, oddly enough, that they're not touted as fantastic in coverage. Obviously, you've done some breakdown where Buchanan, at least in man coverage, is not great, but has good instincts in zone. But the play that they can provide, at least in the box, in run support and just hitting guys over the middle will be fun. I want to see how that goes. I think most people expect Buchanan to come out on top, especially given his first-round status. But a lot of people are expecting a lot of plays, some playmaking out of Tony Jefferson this season. That'll be another position that we can have enjoyable, especially because at those positions, the receiver position is kind of a fun one to watch. For the average fan, watching offensive line is kind of it's hard to do. It takes a very good eye to catch what's happening on the offensive line. I struggle with it myself. But the wide receiver play, that's fun. Safeties, you can see what's happened out there. You see the hits, even though they won't be making big hits, but at least in the preseason, that'll be fun. So that's going to be something that our average fans will be able to see a lot more of.
Yeah, and I really like what Brown brings to the table because, as we've discussed before, he's really that ideal Arians, you know, burner receiver, kind of undersized. He's a guy that does a lot, you know, of different work on different levels of the field. So he fits what Arians likes to do. And I think, you know, Ginn was a good signing, but I think I tweeted this out when they signed him. I really saw it as paying a lot of money to get a kick returner slash punt returner, and not necessarily a guy that's going to fight for time at receiver. And I still kind of feel that way. Like he's a nice weapon to have in case Brown doesn't progress like they're expecting. But I think they have high hopes for John Brown. And, you know, we've seen in Arians in the past offenses, he can definitely coax a lot of big plays out of rookie receivers and expect them to, you know, make plays. As far as the safety position goes, you kind of nailed it in terms of whoever loses the battle isn't really going to lose in terms of not getting playing time. They just may not be listed as a starter, and you and I have talked about that before. It's a big deal for NFL guys to be listed as starters.
Oh, definitely.
It's a pride.
It's a big deal for contracts. It's a big deal for them.
But it, you know, it won't make a difference in where, you know, how much they play unless, you know, somebody doesn't progress like we're expecting them to. So you'll see a lot of, I think you'll see a lot of Tony Jefferson in the dollar package that we've talked about before. And we'll see, you know, because they are better in zone coverage right now. You know, they'll be able to kind of fill those zones out and really help out a what doesn't look great on paper right now, you know, linebacking core in terms of coverage. So I think that's something you kind of, you know, hit the nail on the head. It may not be what you expect right away, but it's they're going to both play a lot, barring catastrophe.
Yeah, exactly. Let's take a look at the specific little position battles that are going on. Give us your predictions. I'm going to look at right tackle to start with. I think that Bobby Massey is going to come out ahead, and truthfully, I've said this before, Bobby Massey has to come out ahead. I don't think he makes the team if he's not the starter because of the fact that he doesn't play anywhere but right tackle. That would open the door for Nate Potter to stay as the swing tackle guard guy, and with Sal, you know, starting. But Massey has to win that position battle. Otherwise, he's not going to have a place on this team, unfortunately. And I pick Massey. Are you thinking Massey's the guy that's going to come out of that battle?
I think he needs to be. I hope he is. You're always concerned when it's a player or when a player struggles with the mental aspect of the game, because there's always the, okay, is it ever going to click? But, you know, just from everything, you know, you and I have heard, it sounds like he's getting there. And so that's basically the best you can hope for at this time, is that he's as close, or, you know, is that he's there and that he'll win. I really do think he'll win the position. And like I said, I hope he wins the position, because as good of a story as Bradley Saul is, he wasn't effective last year. And that's just, you know, that's not picking on the guy or anything like that. That's just the reality of the situation. He wasn't an effective player. So you'd like a guy like Bobby Massey, who has more physical talent, to win the position.
And Saul, interestingly enough, now he kept he was a fighter, so he didn't quite give up the number of sacks, at least the results. He wasn't great. I ran across a number. I was looking at some of the stats on Pro Football Focus, and I was just abysmal. The Cardinals over left end with using Bradley Saul as their main blocker there. They, on the running game, they averaged 1.8 yards a carry going over Saul, which is, that's awful. 1.8. And that's what you got from Levi, at least. He would maul, and that's what they did all the time. They would run left tackle, run left tackle, run left tackle, but then he'd give up sacks. Sal was a still gave it pressure, but he's a better fighter to keep him off of Carson, and Carson was better getting the ball away. But that's really been understated, the fact that Sal was really ineffective in the running game.
Yeah, and that's, you know, like you said, that was, you know, if you want to paint Levi in a good picture in some way, that's what he offered, at least. He was a very, very good run blocker, and he always was effective in the run game, and, you know, you really can't take that away from him, no matter how terrible he was as a pass protector, and I don't think anybody would argue otherwise. So, but, yeah, like we said, I think we're both kind of on the same wavelength. We'd like to see Massey. We expect to see Massey. I think we'll both be disappointed if, in fact, if we don't see Massey win that job.
Yes, especially since he's done so well on the mental side of things when it comes to this offseason. We saw it in his rookie year. It took him half a year to kind of get things. He was struggling really bad. Then he realized, hey, I have to get in the playbook. It's something he never had to do ever because so physically he dominated physically so well in high school and in college. Having to grind in the playbook was something that was new to him. Then he gets the new coaching staff. He doesn't catch on. He has mental errors early, only he wasn't allowed to work through them. The Cardinals picked up Eric Winston, and Bobby Massey was relegated to a couple of the series against Houston and then jumbo tight end packages as basically as a tackle eligible. So he didn't get to work through that. Only this offseason, the mental errors apparently have waned, and he's much more consistent, and it really would be disappointing. Let's look at right guard. We've got Paul Fonseca and Earl Watford. Who's your pick? I mean, rather than not what you want, but what you think will happen by the end of camp.
The problem we have coming out here is that we haven't seen Watford at all, like literally at all since preseason. So we have no idea where he's at in his progression, other than the fact that he's never actually gotten on the field. So that's kind of concerning. You look at Fonseca. He's, you know, we've had the conversations. He's not good, so that's a concern. But I think you could see Fonseca. Anthony Steen's an interesting one, and you and I have had this conversation. You know, not on the air, but just, you know, in person together. That Steen, I feel like he's here to take over at center next year or the year after. So we'll see what happens. But I think Steen could possibly make a run. The guy we haven't talked about at all is Ted Larson.
which is strange, because that was one of the first signings. And like, hey, Ted Larson. And then we haven't heard anything. Now, Darren Urban on one of the articles said that Larson was backing up Sunline. So he was running second team center. I never saw Larson at center, personally. I saw Tommy Dreheim, a guy that they picked up for this offseason, as the backup center. I never saw Larson backing up Sunline. So that's an interesting element there, because originally, was he going to mix for right guard? Haven't seen him in the mix at all for right guard. And then I thought, oh, he's going to be this Mike Gibson this year. Only I haven't seen him backing up Sunline, though according to Darren Urban of EasyCardinals.com, that's been the case, too. I just haven't seen it in one time I was out there.
Yeah, and so that'll be interesting. I think when it's all said and done, gosh, I think it's going to be Fonseca, and that's only because I don't know what to expect from Watford or Steen at this point. Steen, I know he's a you know, technician type guard, strong at the point of attack. He's not super athletic. He's just kind of a grinder. He's kind of like Fonseca, except I think he's better. But again, he's coming off an injury. He's tough. You know, you kind of talked about it the other night when we were discussing it. You know, he played the entire season injured at Alabama. I think every player on Alabama's roster plays the entire season injured, though. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what he brings to the table. But again, I really think it's going to be Fonseca. And, you know, maybe we see the end of Earl Watford here. That's something we'll talk about later, though. So I want to circle back one thing, though, real quick. And,
sure.
And we were talking about that right tackle position. I was going to ask you a question because we talked a little bit about the jumbo packages, and Eric likes jumbo packages. Sal's an ex-tight end. Nate Potter actually played in the jumbo packages a little bit last year. Here's my question for you. Massey makes, you know, is the starter. And we know how bad of a run blocker, you brought it up already, Bradley Sal is. At that point, do you think it's Potter or Sal that is kind of their swing tackle guard or jumbo package offensive lineman?
Oh, I don't think that in that jumbo package, because of the personnel they now have at tight end, I don't think they'll need to bring in a tackle eligible. They'll just have Troy Nicholas. That, personally, that's what I think is going to happen. We're not going to have to see Bobby Massey or Nate Potter or Bradley Sal come in as a jumbo guy. Is they'll bring in Troy Nicholas, who is good at it.
Okay, I was just curious if that was going to make a difference at all in kind of the roster.
And that was actually one of the things that I brought it up at some point. It was a show, it was with you on Twitter, just my personal thoughts. When they drafted Troy Nicholas, the interesting thing is that, especially last year, they had a few plays. They ran it a couple dozen times over the course of the year when they had the three tight end, or rather two tight end and tackle eligible. That's a telegraphed run play. You know, guaranteed, that they were going to do with the ball. They were going to hand the ball off to Rashard Mendenhall. Having Troy Nicholas, who is going to be a great blocker, to come in to be that third tight end, that jumbo tight end. Guess what? You've created just a little bit of a wrinkle of doubt. They could play fake and just dump it off to him out in the flat. And I think that's a better option than honestly any of the three tackles that they could have used in Sal or Massey or Potter personally.
Yeah, and that's fair enough. I was just curious. You know, I think you and I have talked about just what Nicholas brings as a blocker right now. So I think that's kind of what we both agree with there. So
let's look at running back two. I mean, we know Andre Ellington. Andre Ellington is the man here, and now we've got Jonathan Dwyer. You've got Stephon Taylor. Then you've got in the mix Robert Hughes. He's not going to be the second running back. We know that. So let's take a look. Who's your pick? Who's going to be the number two guy? Is it going to be Dwyer or is it going to be Taylor? I know fans really would like for Stephon Taylor to take that next step and be the number two guy. We talked about last year. He's basically a Rashard Mendenhall type runner. At least he's Rashard Mendenhall, only younger. Is he going to pass a Dwyer, or is the former Steeler running back, is Jonathan Dwyer this year's Rashard Mendenhall? Which way do you see that going?
These are so hard. I think we're going to see Taylor because he, as we talked about, he's a little bit younger. Jonathan Dwyer's not that old. I mean, he's only what? 25. So, I mean, he's really not that much older than Stephon Taylor, who's 23. But, yeah, I think we'll see Taylor early. He'll get the chance. He'll get the opportunity. And I think he'll win the position because I think he's going to get a lot of carries. I think they'll both get a lot of carries against second, third teams. And I think that Taylor will be able to take advantage of that at that juncture.
And I'm going quite the other way, and I think that's why they brought Dwyer. Yes, they want competition, but I think that kind of that comfort that Arians has with his Steelers guys, I think Dwyer's going to be that guy. I think Taylor's probably another year away. As we saw last year, he had a couple of solid, really good late runs, but he had 2 yards on a pile of dust kind of guy as well. I think Dwyer's size is intriguing, and especially Taylor will still get time. I don't doubt that. He'll definitely get time on the field because he is a good pass blocker, and so he'll probably, at least early on in the season, Taylor might overtake it. Like last year, Alphonso Smith, because kind of a third down back last year, and then his playing time disappeared as Taylor developed. I think Taylor will be that third down back type of guy. and perhaps could get more playing time later on. Wide receiver three, go. You had something?
No, go ahead. I was just going to say I can see where you're coming from on that side, so I definitely could see that.
Look at the wide receiver three position I talked about a little bit. You've got Ted Ginn, John Brown. I think at least I know that the tendency to say, hey, Ted Ginn's going to be the guy at least early on. This is going to be where I say I think John Brown beats him out. I think he's going to be – I don't think Arians is going to hold him back as they did with Ellington, obviously, and I think John Brown is going to be the guy that they just can't keep off the field, unfortunately for Ginn. I think he'll end up being the number three receiver coming out of camp.
I agree with you. I talked about that a little earlier. I not a big Ted Ginn guy at receiver. I think he's gonna be a great number four receiver, as great as a number four receiver. You know, as much as this team's going to throw the football, that's not going to be a bad thing. And I think that's where Ginn can kind of excel, is you'll be able to put both Ginn and Brown on the field at the same time and really, really take advantage of what they can do. So I think that's where that'll be for me at this point.
Let's look at inside linebacker, not Mentor's position, but the other one where you've got a mix of Larry Foote, Lorenzo Alexander, and a lesser extent, you've got Ernie Sims and Kenny Demons and some of the undrafted, some of the young guys, JoJo Dixon, Jonathan Brown, and Glenn Carson. Starting alongside Minter, who do you give the likely edge to? Is it going to be Foote? Is it going to be Alexander? Is it going to be Sims? Is he going to do anything?
Oh, man, this is probably the worst one. I think it's going to be Foote simply because of his incredible ability to know what he needs to do and be at places. I think it's going to be a lot like Paris Linden was 2 years ago, where his numbers, when you look at his like in-depth numbers on a site like Pro Football Focus or places like that, are not going to be great, but he's going to be around the ball and make a lot of plays, whereas I think Sims is the exact opposite. He has all the natural ability in the world. I just don't think he has it upstairs. And then Kenny Demons, I mean, again, a young player that it's hard to kind of talk about progressions of a player that we really haven't seen a whole lot of on the field. Especially, you know, I haven't been at camp yet, so I have no idea what he's going to look like. So we'll just see from there.
And Sims, I think, is going to be the odd man. I think he's not going to make the roster. We'll talk about that in minutes. I don't know if that's going to be a surprise cut. And I'm going to go kind of on the same line as Lorenzo Alexander said on his interview on Arizona Sports the other day. He thinks perhaps at this point in his career, Alexander and Foote in terms of linebacking skills might be pretty even. However, if you put Alexander in the starting spot, then you're going to take him off the special teams where he is a dynamic player. And unless Larry Foote is a dynamic player on special teams, I'm not sure. Foote's going to be the guy. I don't think he's going to be – unlike what we saw with Paris Lennon a couple of years ago when Horton never took him off the field, I think we're going to see Foote as a two-down guy. I don't know if Minter will be a two-down guy. I see Alexander, who's played more in coverage, who has the range to be able to do it, to come in as a nickel coverage guy. If they go with the six defensive backs, I could actually see them taking both Minter and Foote out and putting Alexander in a sub package with Tony Jefferson or Deion Buchanan down in the box like a linebacker. So I'm going to lean. I thought that the Larry Foote sighting was actually very understated. I'm with Sean Church, who loves this Larry Foote signing because of the veteran savvy next to Kevin Minter. And I think it will be a very, very worthwhile signing. Not at Carlos Dansby-like in terms of numbers, but every bit is impactful, especially when you got a young guy in Minter next to him. I'm going to talk outside linebacker. We're not going to talk about John Abraham. We're going to assume, at least for now, based on paper, that Abraham earned himself a starting spot. He came into last year knowing he was probably going to be a situational guy, but then ended up being the starter because of injury, and he excelled at it. He flushed the quarterback well. He got the sacks. he played well against the run. He was praised many times by Bruce Arians about how well he held up against the run. So we're going to talk about the other side, because Matt Shaughnessy was never meant to be a starter and ended up being that. And Todd Bowles had to change around what he did. He didn't drop his outside linebackers into coverage at all, but at the same time he had Washington and Dansby, who have the range to be able to do it. So let's look at the other side. You've got Shaughnessy, Matt Shaughnessy. You've got Alex Okafor, the second-year player, who missed most of last year with the arm injury, and get Sam Acho coming back, and then you've got a slew of less basic of those three. Do you see Shaughnessy being the starter, let's talk at most of the time. Shaughnessy might be the guy in base packages because of his run support, but if you're talking about the greater playing time at that other outside linebacker, do you see it being Shaughnessy? Do you see it being Okafor? Do you see it being Acho? What would you say?
That's a tough one. I'm going to start with Acho, I think, because he is the guy that he's the most well-rounded, if you will. I don't think he's necessarily – he's a great backup linebacker to have. I'm not sure I'm, like, super comfortable with him starting, but I think he offers you more in the run game than a guy like – or not in the run game, in the pass game than a guy like – Shaughnessy does, so I think I'll go with that. I think what you'll see is Shaughnessy will get starts against, or maybe not even starts, but Shaughnessy will get the majority of the snaps against a lot of the NFC West, and then any other run-heavy teams that they have on their roster or on the schedule this year. I'd have to go look at their schedule. I can't even remember off the top of my head. And then you'll see Acho on the other side. Okafor is kind of like the other guys, like, I want to see him do something on the field before I can say, oh, yeah, this guy's definitely going to make an impact. Because we're talking about a fourth rounder that played played five snaps total. And those five snaps, if you just go off Pro Football Focus's grades, weren't good. So,
well,
you know.
And they were also granted.
Well, Arizona Cardinals fans, I must apologize for some technical difficulties we had. I was right in the middle of talking about Alex Okafor when my internet crashed. And so I didn't have internet for about half hour. I had to fire things back up, and after the show was already done. And my backup plan, I got on my cell phone, using my cell phone recorder, and I talked to Seth some more. Unfortunately, that also failed. So, well, it was a bunch of garbled mess. So you missed more or less the gist of what we said. Alex Okafor is an intriguing guy. We talked about the strong safety position. We both thought that Deion Buchanan would be the guy to win the job. At kicker, I thought it would be Jake Thiele. Seth thought it might be Chandler Catanzaro, the kid out of Clemson. Then we talked about cuts and roster makes. We both sort of talked about how the roster is set up. It really might not be really any surprising cuts. So Earl Watford could be a guy if he doesn't win the starting job. I think Bobby Massey, if he doesn't win the starting job, will be cut. We didn't see Rob Houser as being a cut guy. Jerrod Powers could get cut in a particular scenario, as could Drew Stanton, but it's a very unlikely. And I mentioned Sam Acho, depending on the numbers game, as well. So there not that much a way of surprise cuts. And the roster is set up as such. So barring injury, I don't see that happen. A surprise makes, in particular, the young guys. We talked about Anthony Steen. Glenn Carson, I mentioned. Jimmy Legree, I mentioned. Seth downplayed it because of the way that the roster is set up. It makes it really kind of hard for some of these undrafted guys to step up and make a real impression. Other than that, and we close the show. Arizona Cardinals fans, I'd like to thank you for listening to Revenge of the Birds Radio. Seth is already off for the night, as I tried to finish off the show with him, but unfortunately that technology failed me as well. My internet was not pleasant. It fired back up. I should have just tried to reset the modem at the start instead of panicking at the moment with the show on. But this is Revenge of the Birds Radio signing out. We'll hear from you at training camp again. Give me a shout-out. Well, this is Jess Root, Seth Cox on the line. Have a good night. Have a good day whether you're listening via live or via download, in case, and this is the case, you'll be listening via download. And we'll see you at training camp. Thanks for listening.
You know it's summer when all people want to talk about is the weather. How seasonable it is, especially for this time of year. How incredibly mild. How typical. How it's finally come around. And how actually, now that it is here, it's all just a bit too much. We don't mind it hot, but not this hot. You also know it's summer when you can grab yourself a frozen strawberry lemonade. Tangy iced lemon mixed with a sweet strawberry swirl. $1.99 from the McCafe Ice Range at McDonald's. Served until the 11th of October, subject to availability. Price of participation may vary.